You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to another episode of Nightmare Alley, the detour podcast in the Nightmare on Film Street feed. I'm John.
I'm Kim.
And we are here today to talk with Sputnik director Igor Abramenko. Sputnik came out last week, August 14th, from your friends at IFC Midnight, which I keep saying for some reason. I don't know why.
I enjoy it.
Yeah. You know why I think? It reminds me of old Grindhouse trailers, specifically the trailers in Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez's Grindhouse. Mostly, I think, because they have been putting out Grindhouse-style trailers for each of their movies.
Posters.
I meant to say posters. My mistake. Because IFC is the only film distributor right now that is still continuing to put out movies at the theater. Drive-ins specifically, but the moment the pandemic started, IFC stepped up and did what they had to make sure that we had new content at the drive-in theater.
They are killing the drive-in game.
Insane, right? I was reading an article recently that they're only like 2.6% behind last year's revenue.
You were reading an article.
Oh, I read sometimes. Yep.
Sputnik, as John said, is out now. You can catch it at drive-ins if there's a theater near that's open, although not Nightmare on Film Street approved. Or VOD.
Also available on VOD.
VOD, so you don't even have to leave your footy pajamas.
Sputnik is set in 1983, Cold War era, Russia.
This is John's bag.
Oh, yes, it's my bag. Very much my bag.
He gets twinkly eyes for Cold War shit.
I don't know what it is. Suspicion, paranoia. It's, oh, yeah.
Government lies.
Right? Oh, boy. This movie could not have come out at a better time. Let's be real, right?
Like, yeah, UFO shit everywhere.
We watched this movie a little early. We watched it back in June, and that was right when all the fucking, like, oh, the Senate wants the CIA to do, I don't know any of the actual stuff.
Unclassified, reclassified, unclassified, public.
Yeah. Public. We want to hear about it.
We're all thirsty for public.
Yeah, and thirsty for aliens, and that's the, oh boy, does this movie deliver. This movie's got such a good alien monster. I don't think I'm giving anything away by saying that.
Nope.
Nope.
Not at all.
And one that just, like, when I think about it, just makes my stomach turn. Like, it's, like, you know, you will hear the director himself talk about referencing Ridley Scott's Alien. But in the press release that came with the movie, like, the core idea for, like, the horror behind it came from, you know, just the thought that, you know, wouldn't it suck if all of a sudden you had a snake living inside your stomach? And they kind of just expanded from there.
My greatest fear in life is tapeworms.
Oh, man. Can you imagine just drinking a glass of water then finding out that, like, oh, you got a bunch of bugs in you now.
Do you remember that freaky story we were growing up about the woman that was eating this new, unapproved, non-FDA, like, diet pill, and it was a tapeworm? Yeah. That's, no.
Tapeworms are crazy. Let's not get into it, but...
There's this fish, actually.
Uh-huh.
Side note. There's this fish that eats the tongue of another fish becomes that fish's tongue.
Right.
That's like a tongue tapeworm. And then it eats its food. Can you imagine if you went to go, like, eat a burger and your tongue was just like, hop, hop, hop?
You think you had to get a tinier, smaller burger to distract your tongue while you ate your burger? And then every time you accidentally bit your tongue, you got punched in the side of the mouth?
One grandpa burger, one slider, please. So, we're talking about aliens today.
Yes. And I highly encourage you to check out Sputnik. It is a super great movie. It's, you know, very period authentic. Got a great paranoid atmosphere going on.
Super moody, super delicious. Love the pace and the tone of this one. I know we're hopped up on the alien goodness, but this one definitely paints a really great picture.
And if you're a space nerd, they use actual cosmonaut spacesuits in this movie. You're going to hear all about it.
I was like, don't spoil the interview, John.
Yeah, it's a really good interview. We were very thankful to sit down and talk with the director, Igor Abramenko.
All the way from Moscow. Pretty sweet.
Yeah.
The magic of Zoom.
But let's get into it. Enjoy Sputnik and enjoy our interview with director Igor Abramenko.
Hey, Он ничего не знает об этом. Ваша, моя задача — это разделить паразита и носителя.
Чего еще от меня надо?
Если я руковожу исследованием, почему от меня по-прежнему все скрывают? Мы рискуем жизнью человека. Герой Советского Союза.
Если герой, значит, готов ко всему. В том числе и пожертвовать собой. Надо было мне сразу вам все рассказать.
Бегите.
So, Igor, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We're really excited to talk to you about Sputnik.
Well, thanks a lot for having me today. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, and congrats on your debut feature. This is your first feature film.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. And I look forward to receiving the feedback from the people and exciting about the release.
Yeah, I'm sure this could be like a little bit of a stressful time worrying about how people are going to take the film. But what was it like directing a larger feature for the first time?
Well, that was kind of stressful thing, I would say. I mean that my first experience with the full feature, I had quite a big background with shooting commercials, music videos, and I was working a lot in the short form, but that specific movie was really sort of spiritual journey. And I mean that was kind of personal project that took me almost 5 years to make.
Wow.
So,
oh, wow.
So right now the Sputnik is a huge part of my life, and sometimes you know, when I see the upcoming reviews or the news articles, I can't even believe that it's over. I mean, that I don't need to go back to post-production to fix something, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah.
The film's set in 1983, and it has a great sort of Cold War era paranoia atmosphere to it. What was it like trying to design and create such a time period that everybody's kind of familiar with?
Initially we picked up this specific period because of the, you know, overall aesthetics of 80s. I mean, that time period really attracted us in terms of its visual form, in terms of interior design, in terms of costume, in terms of, you know, other stuff that we could play on with on a visual level. And also the other reason why we chose this time was, you know, was because, you know, it was quite crucial period for Russian history. You know, it's 1983. It was something in the middle. It was just a few years before the perestroika started, and still it was Soviet society. But that was sort of transition time period when the people's mindsets were changing, their beliefs were changing, they were going into, you know, the new era. And we thought that it would be a great time to unfold our story, you know. And also, you know, that the great thing, I think, that the 80s, it's a really golden era for great sci-fi movies. So, I mean, it was a match. So that's why I think we picked up this period.
Yeah, there's something so great, too, about seeing, like, the slightly outdated technology and the spacesuits and stuff. There's just something so, like, I'm not nostalgic for old space travel, but, like, I guess I kind of am.
Yeah. At the very least, you want to see an old computer.
Yeah, I just love seeing like old dials and knobs and computer screens. There's something just so wonderful about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's always fun, you know, to work with such retro texture. So, and you're right. And during our shooting, we had tons of this cool prop that was on our set. And I mean, they are just beautiful things. And you would love to put it, to insert it into the sequence, into the scene. So, yeah, it was fun to have it.
And you also shot on location at an actual institute, correct?
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right that we've got lucky, and we just, you know, by the chance, we discovered this amazing place, which is a biochemical institute, and it's absolutely functional working facility, and it's huge. And we, from the beginning, we've been trying, you know, to be very authentic in terms of delivering a correct image of Soviet time period. But on the other hand, we just wanted to do it slightly differently. I mean, that at one point we just discovered, we just realized that, you know, we've been telling about the alternative Soviet history, the things that never happened officially. You know, it's like, we never knew if the first contact maybe already occurred, and it's, you know, it's hidden somewhere inside the top secret KGB files, and we really loved that idea. We followed that principle, and we just decided to imagine what style, what kind of, you know, texture would fit this idea, this atmosphere. And we immediately thought about, you know, this brutalism, which is an amazing architectural style and was quite popular in Soviet Union. And most importantly, that it, you know, reflects this feel of dread, of you know, of terror. And after that, we started searching for such locations. And as I already said, we discovered this amazing place where we shot the 17% of our movie.
Was that architectural style called brutalism when it was like in vogue, like when they were actually building it, or is that something that you've like attributed to it after the fact?
No. I mean, that's an actual style, and we were deeply inspired by it. And so it's brutalism. It's a part of constructivism, which was very popular, you know, in Soviet Union. And we found a lot of things inside that institute, and so we did, and we used it.
Yeah, and it's perfect. It really brings out the entire look that you're going for in this movie, and it's, I'm sure it would have been very hard to get that same look.
To, like, replicate that. Yeah,
on a limited budget in a set somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, it's really hard to reveal that, but, I mean, then we built a few sets. We had a few sets, and we've been working a few days on the soundstage, but the majority part of the movie was shot on location, on real location. And it will, you know, it helped a lot, for instance, for the actors, because, you know, they've been existing in real locations, in real laboratories, you know, and they literally felt this claustrophobic feel of paranoia, the walls that covering them. And
totally.
It was fun.
So, like, obviously in the United States, North America, like, we all point to Area 51 as, like, our location where maybe they have aliens. Is there, like, a specific building or location in Russia that is, like, a hub for conspiracy theories?
Well, great question. I mean, that while prepping the movie, we did a research on a topic, and we discovered that sort of Area 51 military base existed in the 80s in USSR for a couple of years. Mostly they've been doing research on a telepathy and people with such abilities. That was kind of an experimental project that was, you know, quickly shut down due to its inefficiency. But we'll find a few articles about that place, and actually that place inspired us, you know, to create the image of our own military base, of our own Soviet Area 51, the movie. And at that point, we also thought that if such thing the first contact would have occurred, a special KGB unit would handle such thing. And we allowed ourselves to create this special KGB unit from the scratch. So we come up with a, we designed a uniform, special patches. We used an experimental types of weaponry. And that was like that.
That's fun because like they look and feel real, especially given that you've blended them in with a lot of really authentic space uniforms. Didn't you use probably not real space uniforms, but replicas of cosmonaut spacesuits in the beginning?
Actually, at the beginning, at the very first scene, the suits that we've been using, they're real.
Oh, shit. Oh, cool.
They're absolutely real. And those. So that's the thing. The first two scenes, the first one on orbit, the second one is the landing itself. It was shot separately in different days. And the first one we shot on the soundstage, but we shot it after the second scene. And while we've been shooting the second scene, which came first in our shooting schedule, we just literally destroyed the suits. And those suits were ours. I mean, they were exact replicas of the real space suits. And then we realized that we need to do additional shooting. We need to have this orbit scene. But, you know, we just, our suits were destroyed, as I said. And we just, you know, asked, the organization which called the Roscosmos. It's a Russian NASA. If they could provide the suits for us. And they said, yeah, sure. And they came up with the real suits that we've been using during that sequence. And that was, I would say that was hell of a nightmare for the actors to act in those suits because they were really uncomfortable. And the oxygen box was attached to each suit, the special, box that were ventilating those suits because you immediately start to sweat when you're inside those suits and you need these ventilations. And our actors, between the takes, they were sitting in their chairs with these boxes. They've been ventilating them. I mean, that I can't even imagine what they came through.
It almost sounds like it would have been easier to film it in space, at least for them, right?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. That was hell of a shooting because there was gimbal and the stage, those suits, and that was challenging.
What kind of like superhuman like negotiating power do you have to just call people up and say, hey, can we take your like piece of history spacesuits and can we just film in your medical institute while we make a monster movie? That's insane to me.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I keep asking myself the same question, how did I achieve that? And I don't know. I mean, that I had a really extraordinary crew in the team that I've been working with. I mean, my DP, my production designer, they did a great job. And also, my producers, they were very helpful. And sometimes when we just had no options, I told them that, guys, we need to build this capsule for the first scene and we need to find those suits. They made it happen. Wow. I mean, it was sort of a miracle and great efforts of different wonderful people that have been involved with this project.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Yeah, it sounds like they really spoiled you for your first feature. That's great.
Yeah, kind of.
You know, there's a lot of stories about Stanley Kubrick negotiating shooting in the war room for Dr. Strangelove, and how, you know, that led to him filming the moon landing. And I wouldn't be surprised if somebody says that, like, you're in bed with the KGB at this point.
Oh, maybe you're going to have your own conspiracy theories soon.
Yeah, like if aliens crash land, like actual aliens
maybe
crash
land. Maybe you'll get
land, to film it. Yeah. Do you, this maybe seems like a good point, and I'm sure you're probably sick of getting asked this question, but do you believe in aliens?
UFOs. Say classy.
All right, you believe in UFOs.
I do believe. I do believe in UFOs. I do believe in aliens, and I must tell you that I strongly believe that every director who touches upon such a theme is a really true believer of extraterrestrial life. I mean, that's my point, and I honestly hope that one day we would meet them. I mean, that I hope that mostly it would be not like an Independence Day, but like an Arrival movie, and they will not annihilate us. They will bring some knowledge, you know, something that we can use. And but I mean that when I was a kid, I was, you know, thinking a lot about that. I was asking like stupid questions to my parents about such stuff, and I was thinking a lot about, you know, I mean that. Well, it all sounds silly, but yeah, as I said, I strongly believe that we're not alone, and I hope someday that I'll see, you know, these first contacts.
I'm with you, man. Like, I don't know how possible it's going to be, but yeah, I spent my entire childhood just, like, staring at the sky, bugging my parents about stuff that they didn't want to hear about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe focusing more on alien movies. Like, what are some of those 80s sci-fi movies that that inspired you to become a filmmaker and maybe also inspired Sputnik itself?
Well, there were a lot of inspirations for Sputnik. I mean, the Ridley Scott's Alien is a quite an obvious example. I mean, that's this movie is in DNA of Sputnik, but and also there were a lot of different other sources of inspirations that me and my crew used throughout the prepping the Sputnik. But speaking of films that affected me personally, inspired me to do movies, I recall, you know, well, I think that Steven Spielberg and Ridley Scott movies were my first real movie experiences. I recall it was 1996. I was a kid. I was living in a small town in the south of Russia, and my dad just got back from business trip, and he brought home the very first VHS tape, which was Jurassic Park, which just came out, and I watched it. I was truly made with the in shock with this worlds of dinosaurs that suddenly came to life. After that, I watched the Indiana Jones trilogy, and I quite like that. But there is one fun fact. I also had another tape, which was labeled Indiana Jones Part 4, and it was still 1996. And as we all know, the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull didn't come out yet.
Yeah.
So I just watched it, and I didn't understand why Harrison Ford, instead of a hat and a whip, was wearing this slim long jacket and carrying a blaster. And his name wasn't Indiana Jones anymore. His name was Rick Deckard. And, you know, he was trying to catch these androids. And so basically I watched Blade Runner. I didn't get it. I just didn't understood what I watched, but I was really gripped by, you know, this dark, gloomy atmosphere, this mixture of science fiction and noir movies. And, well, still Blade Runner is one of among my favorite movies, and it affected me a lot.
Definitely. I mean, and you can see it too. Like, there's, I don't necessarily remember where Blade Runner was filmed, but yeah, it has some of that brutalism type architecture in the future world that Ridley Scott created there.
Yeah, definitely. And that was a great decision. I mean, that he showed the future society like no one showed it before. I mean, it's unique, and it's still unique. I mean, that it's great.
Oh yeah, I gotta get you to see that sometime.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, you'll love it. Rutger Hauer's the bad guy. He's great. So do you play, like, just given your love for that and the two films you've made now, like Passenger, your short, and Sputnik, are you planning on staying in the sci-fi horror space?
Well, absolutely. I think that science fiction is the great genre that allows you to play a lot with the themes, with the different concepts. It helps you to expand your abilities to tell the stories. So, and I mean that I would definitely, I would like to stay in that genre and keep exploring it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I think sci-fi, I think, like, science fiction is always stories about humanity, right? And, you know, like, my limited knowledge on Russian film seems to be very interested in the human condition, so I think this is a great unison. I think you're in the right spot. And just mentioning your short Passenger, is that available anywhere right now?
I'm afraid no.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it's just a trailer somewhere, but I don't think there is an open link somewhere, so because, you know, initially The Passenger, it wasn't like a kind of standalone movie. I would say that was a part of this long process of building the full feature, because we did it intentionally as a proof of concept short, and we just got lucky, and we showed it on Fantastic Fest at Austin and at Scream Fest in Los Angeles, and so it has sort of festival history, but we never, you know, considered this movie as a standalone piece. It's, you know, it's a just short introduction into the world of Sputnik that set up a character, the environment, the texture of the movie.
And do you see Sputnik as sort of like a spiritual sequel to that? Because I haven't seen Passenger, but from what I understand, it's more or less about a parasite type alien. I think it acts quite a bit differently.
Well, yeah, it's I think that's correct definition. It's a spiritual sequel to The Passenger, because, you know, in The Passenger, it was slightly different story, but it worked out eventually, because it was the story that unfolded in the 70s and depicted this cosmonaut, the Soviet hero that got back from the orbit, but instead of going into the military base when he's got locked up, he went straight home, and he ended up in his apartment at the center of Moscow. And at one point we realized that he's not alone, he's living with this creature in his Moscow apartment. So it is slightly different, but as I said, the main goal of this short was to, you know, to set up the world, to show the hero, and to show this, you know, this contrast that's a very common environment. It's a Soviet Union, Soviet space hero, but he's living with a predator, with a creature inside his apartment. So yeah.
That's some scary shit. Are you working on anything now? Is there anything people can look forward to?
Well, I'm developing a few projects right now at the same time. And as I said, both of them are in a science fiction field, and I don't want to go into the details, but I have a long list of my favorite movies, but I would pick two. The Alien is the first one. So I already did a movie about the aliens. The next my favorite movie is Blade Runner, that we already discussed it. So I would say that my next movie would be about artificial intelligence, about the robots and all that stuff. That, so yeah, and I'm working on a script right now, and I hope that we would eventually we'll make it.
Are you? I got one other question I want to ask, but like, just thinking about some of your answers, are you just like a little bit scared of the future? Like, do you think that something is gonna, like, the great filter is coming and we're not ready for it?
Like everybody else, I mean, you never know.
Maybe this is a bad time to ask that question. We're all scared. Right, yeah. On. Well, thank you again for taking the time to talk to us. Before we let you go, we like to ask everybody what their dream double feature would be at the drive-in if they could program one double feature.
That's a very tough question. I mean, it's really hard to pick up, but I would say that if we're talking about the drive-ins double feature, it would definitely be John Carpenter's movie, and I would say it would be Assault on Precinct 13,
right,
and
on
The Thing.
That's great.
And yeah. The Thing.
Do you guys have drive-ins there, like they are in North America?
No, we don't. But they started to appear because of the pandemic.
Oh, cool.
Of the quarantine. I just read that about like 5 drive-ins just opened this month in Moscow. So it's amazing how, you know, the pandemic and the lockdown allows new places to appear. I mean, yeah. So that's a good thing.
And like IFC, sorry, did you say something?
Oh, I was just going to say that, like, we have a bunch of drive-ins here, but yeah, because of the pandemic, like, we're finding them popping up in parking lots.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I've never been to Russian drive-ins, but I assume they pretty the same.
Screen, car.
Space. Yeah.
Yeah, IFC's been doing an incredible job of taking their movies and bringing them to drive-ins so people still have a chance to see them. I know Sputnik is playing in North America. Do you know if Sputnik's going to be playing at drive-ins in Russia?
That would be cool.
No, actually, because we already had our Russian release, which was in April, and we unfortunately went out right at the beginning of the pandemic, and we released straight to the VOD. So, but I mean that we like kind of used the momentum that a lot of people, everybody was staying home, and a lot of people watched our movie, and so that was a good thing. But I'm really glad, I'm really happy that, you know, the people in the world, in other countries, would get a chance to watch our movie on the big screen, because initially this movie was designed for a big screen.
Definitely.
Yeah, there's so much atmosphere.
They all enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much again, Igor, for taking the time to talk to us. We were really, really enjoyed Sputnik. It was a great movie.
Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me today.
Sputnik is playing at select drive-ins and movie theaters right now, and it's also available on demand and VOD. Be sure to let us know what you thought of the movie over on Twitter at NOFS Podcast, on Instagram at Nightmare on Film Street, on Reddit, reddit.com/r/Nightmare on Film Street, and of course in the Horror Movie Fiend Club at facebook.com/groups/horrorfiendsofNOFS. But until next week, I'm John.
I'm Kim.
Stay creepy.
We've spared your soul this week, fiend. But only because you've earned it. More exclusive content can be found lurking at patreon.com/Nightmare on Film Street. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio.
See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.